All right, let's go back to Zechariah to chapter 11. Chapter 11 concludes the first burden of Zechariah, comprising chapter 11, verses 1 through 17. The way the chapter is divided is he begins describing a massive devastation of the land in verses 1, 2, and 3. He then gives two reasons for the devastation. The first reason is rejecting the true shepherd in verses 4 through 14, and then secondly accepting a false shepherd in verses 15 through 17. So begin with point one, the devastation of the land in chapter 11, verses 1, 2, and 3. He begins with Lebanon in verses 1 and 2. Open your doors, O Lebanon, that fire may devour your cedars. Wail a fir tree, for the cedar is fallen, because the goodly ones are destroyed. And in essence, he talks about Lebanon focusing on the destruction of its main key export, which was the cedars of Lebanon. There's also the main construction element of the temple. It was Solomon built the Jewish temple. He imported cedars from Lebanon. The same thing happened with the rebuilding of the second temple. They imported the cedars from Lebanon. And in the case of Solomon, you see this in 1 Kings 5, verses 5 and 6. 1 Kings 5, verses 5 and 6. So the focus may not merely be on the cedars of Lebanon per se, but more specifically on the cedars that were used to build the temple, and therefore the temple will be destroyed. He then moves to Bashan. Bashan today is called the Golan Heights. O you oaks of Bashan, for the strong forest has come upon you, which shows a devastation of the land of Bashan, the land of Golan. He then moves further south. In verse 3, there's the wailing of the shepherds, the voice of the wailing of the shepherds would be the Jewish leaders of this point of time. And the reason is for the glory is destroyed. And the glory of the Jewish shepherds was the city and the temple. So the indication is there'll be the destruction of the city, destruction of the temple, causing the wailing of the shepherds. He moves further south down to Jordan Valley, the end of verse 3, the voice of the roaring of young lions, the reason for the pride of the Jordan is laid waste. And this is the lower Jordan Valley, which was often filled with animals like lions and bears. Mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 5, Jeremiah 12, verse 5, chapter 49, verse 19, chapter 49, verse 19, and chapter 50, verse 44, chapter 50, verse 44. So putting all the geographical indications together in verses 1, 2, and 3 describes a massive devastation of land from the north all the way to the south. And this devastation was fulfilled by the two Roman conquests, two Roman invasions, AD 70 and AD 135. AD 70 and AD 135. The AD 70 was the result of the first Jewish revolt that broke out in the year 66 AD. And so the first Jewish revolt, there was the devastation of AD 70. Then came the second Jewish revolt in the years 132 to 135. 132 to 135, which brought about a second devastation of the land in 135 by the hands of Rome. Having described the massive devastation of the land yet future to Zechariah, which would be the Roman destruction, he then provides two reasons for that destruction. The first reason in verses 4 through 14 is the rejection of the true shepherd. Now, broken it down in your outline to three subdivisions, small a, the commission to the prophet in verses 4 through 6. Now verse 4 focuses on the flock. Thus says Jehovah my God, Zechariah's God, feed the flock of slaughter. In other words, he's now told to feed a flock that is already destined to be slaughtered. The flock is Israel, and they're destined for the slaughter of verses 1, 2, and 3. So that he's to feed a flock already destined to be slaughtered. And in verses 5 and 6, he describes the condition of the flock. Two things. First of all, in verse 5, it is abandoned by man. Their possessor slayed them and hold themselves not guilty. In the context of fulfillment, the possessors were the Romans. Romans would simply attack the Jews periodically, kill them individually or en masse, and suffer no legal penalties for it, and therefore did not hold themselves guilty. He says, their own shepherds pitied them not. They seldom say, blessed be Jehovah, for I am rich. And they sell the lower Jewish people to become rich, and their own shepherds pitied them not. Their own shepherds would be the Jewish leaders. And what's described here was particularly true of the Sadducean community. So this is a flock that's been abandoned by men, both by their possessors and by their own Jewish shepherds. But secondly, verse 6 also has been abandoned by God. For I will no longer have pity, I will no more pity inhabitants of the land. And God says he will now withdraw his grace, his pityness from the land and from the inhabitants of the land, from the Jewish people. But the Lord delivered the men, everyone, in the hand of his neighbor. Now, when the Romans re-besieged the city in the year AD 68, they had already defeated the Jewish rebels of Galilee, and three generals made it back to Jerusalem that escaped the Roman conquest of the Galilee. And these three Jewish generals had their own soldiers. Instead of becoming united to withstand the siege of Rome, what they chose to do is begin attacking each other. On one hand, they would kill each other's manpower, they would kill each other's soldiers, and secondly, they would destroy what the other group, the different groups that had stored food supply to withstand the siege. And the civil conflict, the inner city conflict between the three generals only lowered their ability to defend the city. As the Romans finally broke through, there wasn't anywhere the defense that could have been held out had they been united. He also says, I will deliver them into the hands of his king. There was no Jewish king in the time of fulfillment, but this is the king that ruled over them, which was Caesar at that time. And in the trial of the Messiah in John chapter 19, verse 15, John 19, verse 15, when Pilate said of Jesus, behold your king, they yelled out, we have no king but Caesar. So Caesar is the king, to Caesar's hand they'll be delivered. And delivered to Caesar. He says the land shall be smitten, in keeping what he already said in verses 1, 2, and 3. And there'll be no deliverance out of the hand, I will not deliver them. According to Josephus, who was a first century Jewish historian, by the time the war ended, over 1,100,000 Jews were killed in that four-year war between 66 and 70. And furthermore, 97,000 were taken into slavery to work on Roman projects in different parts of the Roman world. As the commissioner prophet, he is to feed the flock already destined for the chaos and slaughter, verses 1, 2, and 3. A flock abandoned by man, abandoned by God, destined to be destroyed. Now, small b, we have the carrying out of the commission in verses 7 through 11. In verse 7, we have the feeding of the flock of slaughter. So I fed the flock of slaughter. So he fulfilled the commission. And while initially that means all of the flock, notice there was a special emphasis on the poor of the flock. So the offer was made to the whole flock, but the emphasis on the poor of the flock, which were those Jews who actually believed, is messianic claims. The fulfillment of this you see in Matthew chapter 9, verse 35 and 36. Matthew chapter 9, verse 35 and 36. So again, initially, ministers to his flock as a whole, all Israel, but then begins to focus especially on the poor of the flock, what the prophets called the remnant of Israel, those Jews who believed. It says, I took unto me two staves, and they're for two different purposes. One staff he calls beauty. It's a word that means graciousness that was used for the purpose of protecting the flock from outside attacks. The purpose of the first staff then is to fight off the lions and the bears that were prominent in those days that would attack the private flocks of these shepherds. The second staff he called bands, meaning binding. The purpose of this staff was to keep unity of flock together, to keep them united, to keep them as one. It says, I fed the flock. The flock was fed, and the commission he received in verses 4 through 6 has now been fulfilled. However, in verse 8, he points out, his feeding the flock did not come without opposition. He says, I cut off three shepherds in 1 month. In the context of the fulfillment, these three shepherds are three categories of Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes. Pharisees, Sadducees, and scribes, these were the ones most antagonistic to his claims to be the Messiah. And furthermore, there was mutual antagonism. My soul was weary of them, the souls also loathed me. Mutual antagonism between the good shepherd and these other false shepherds. But in verse 9, the time came for the cessation of the feeding. Then said I will not feed you. And then came a rupture of the good shepherd and the people as a whole. And therefore he ended the feeding to leave them to natural course of events. Thou which dies, let it die. Thou which is to be cut off, let it be cut off. Let him be left, everyone eat the flesh of another. Now the time that this was actually fulfilled is the events of Matthew chapter 12. From Matthew chapter 4 to Matthew chapter 12, Jesus goes all over Israel, city to city, and synagogue to synagogue, proclaiming himself to be the Messiah, and authenticating claims with miracles, signs, and wonders. From chapter 4 to chapter 12, the purpose of his miracles was to serve as signs for Israel to get them to make a decision concerning those claims. So until chapter 12, he was functioning for the ministry of Israel as a whole. But in chapter 12, the leadership officially rejects his messiahship on the grounds that he was demonized. And the explanation of his unique abilities to perform these unique miracles was that he was demonized not by a common demon, but by Beelzebub, the prince of demons. And at that point, he withdraws the offer of the kingdom from the nation of Israel, from that generation specifically, and begins to focus more working with the Jews who believed, the remnant of Israel, and in particular concerning his apostles. And so the break that he prophesies in verse 9 was fulfilled the events of Matthew chapter 12. And that led to verse 10, the breaking of beauty. I took my staff beauty and cut asunder, that I might break my covenant which I had made with all the peoples, and our grace and protection is removed from that generation of Israel in the first century of Jesus' day. And now the covenant with the Gentiles, it's a covenant based upon the principle of the Abrahamic covenant, that God will be the one to protect Israel. But when Israel is disobedient, he'll remove that protection. And now the Gentiles will be allowed to hurt Israel. You see the fulfillment of this in Luke chapter 19, verses 41 through 44. Luke 19, verses 41 through 44. And Luke chapter 21, verse 24. Luke chapter 21, verse 24. And the verses of Matthew 12, by the way, verses 22 through 45. 22 to 45. And verse 11 goes on to describe for us the effect that the breaking of the staff had on the poor of the flock, the believing Jewish remnant. It was broken in that day. Thus the poor of the flock that gave heed unto me, that knew it was the word of Jehovah. He points out the poor of the flock will recognize the events of what was happening. And indeed, in the Luke chapter 21, verse 20, it gives a warning sign to Jewish believers of that day. He tells them, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that her desolation is at hand. And so the sign to Jewish believers that Jerusalem will soon be destroyed, the temple will soon be destroyed, is when they see Jerusalem surrounded by the armies of the Gentiles. It also tells the Jewish believers not to take up weapons to defend themselves, but to abandon the city. If they're inside the city, they should get out. And if they're out in the country, not to go in, but to abandon the city to its destruction because of its rejection of his messiahship. We have details of just how this was indeed fulfilled. Now, the war broke out in the year 66 AD, the first Jewish revolt. And the then Roman governor, Sestus Gallus, spelled G-A-L-L-U-S, G-A-L-L-U-S, assumed it was merely a local revolt in Jerusalem. He brought up his legions up from Caesarea and he besieged the city, surrounding the city by his Roman armies. And the Jewish believers took that to be the sign that Jesus spoke about. They knew they had to also leave the city, but the Romans outside, they could not do so. After a while, Gallus realized that this was not merely a local revolt, it was a grassroots revolt, and Jewish guerrilla forces were cutting the supply lines. He was therefore forced to lift the siege to head back for Caesarea. So temporarily, from 66 to 68, the city was no longer under siege, and that's when the whole Messianic community chose to abandon the city, and the Church of Jerusalem had a minimum of 20,000 members at that point of time. There may be more, but at least 20,000. They're joined by Jewish believers from the rest of Judea and from the Galilee, also from the Golan. And they left the city and crossed the Jordan River into a city called Pella, P-E-L-L-A, P-E-L-L-A, which is just south of the Sea of Galilee, but east of the river. It was among the 10 cities of the Decapolis, and they waited the war out in that particular city before they came back to land. And according to three major sources that we have available, which is Josephus, a first century Jewish historian, Hegesippus, who was a Jewish believer of the second century, and Eusebius, a Gentile Christian of the fourth century, who wrote about these events, they point out that although 1,100,000 Jews were killed in that Roman war, not a single Jewish believer lost his life because of his obedience to the letter of the admission of Jesus and the letter of Hebrews. And so indeed, as verse 11 prophesied, the poor of the flock recognized that what they heard was the word of God, did the proper thing, and they were able to survive. Now small seed, the price of the good shepherd, in verses 12 to 14. In verse 12, we say, see the attitude of the Jewish leaders. And now God tells Zechariah to do something else. To go before the Jewish leaders and say to them, we did not agree to a value of my work in advance. No price was agreed to. So pay me what you think my work is worth to you. If it's worth something to you, pay me what it's worth. If it's worth nothing to you, it's okay to pay me nothing. What they choose to do is give him an insulting price. It would have been less insulting to give him nothing, but they weigh for him for his hire 30 pieces of silver. And this was a symbolic price of contempt. The origin goes back to the Mosaic law in the book of Exodus chapter 21 and verse 32. Exodus 21 verse 32. And the law reads, if you owned an ox, and your ox gored to death your neighbor's slave, you're obligated to pay your neighbor 30 pieces of silver. That was the valued price of a dead slave. As Old Testament history continued, that became a symbolic price of contempt. You should show contempt for someone. You were given 30 pieces of silver, conveying to a person, how much are you worth? You're worth the price of a dead slave. So it would be less insulting to Zechariah to pay him nothing, but to show the contempt for him, they pay him the price of a dead slave. And that's what God says in verse 13. And Jehovah sent to me, cast unto the potter. He's told to now take the previous silver and just throw it to the potter's area of the temple compound. Then God says the goodly prize I was prized of by them. The goodly prize that I was prized of by them. Where God tells Zechariah that someday God himself be sold out by the Jew leaders for the price of a dead slave. There's a tone of sarcasm in the Hebrew text, this splendid value, this 30 pieces of silver, throw it away. This is how much they prized my work among them, God's work among them. Now, when the chief priests were negotiating with Judas, and these were Sadducees, concerning how much that he will get for betraying Jesus, they chose not to give him the 31 or 29. Because when negotiating for a price of something, to avoid the stigma of 30 pieces of silver, they would give him either 29 or 31. But again, to show their contempt for the Messiah, they chose to give exactly 30 pieces of silver and fulfill the prophecy of Zechariah that someday God himself, the Messianic God-man himself, would be sold out for the price of a dead slave. This is recorded in Matthew 26, verses 14 through 16. Matthew 26, verses 14 through 16. At the end of verse 13, he does carry out this commission. I took the 30 pieces of silver and cast them unto a pot in the house of Jehovah. And what he was told to do, he would do, which is a prelude to what Judas would do in Matthew 27, verses 3 through 10. Matthew 27, verses 3 through 10. And then comes the breaking of the second staff in verse 14. Now cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, the purpose being that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. And now unity of the Jewish people is destroyed, factions form among those three generals, and civil strife, killing each other off, destroying each other's food supply, caused Jerusalem to finally fall to Rome, and the Jewish flock will be scattered around the world. Let's summarize what we learned so far. Before destruction in chapters in verses 1, 2, and 3, the Messiah will come. A remnant of Jewish people will follow him, but others will value him to be worth that of a dead slave and sell him out for 30 pieces of silver. As a consequence, people will be given over to the Gentiles and dispersed, scattered around the world. And the picture of the Messiah as the Good Shepherd, you'll see in fulfillment in John chapter 10, verses 11 through 18. John chapter 10, 11 through 18. And so the rejection of the true shepherd led to the devastation of AD 70. The result of AD 70 is the fall of the temple, the fall of the city. And the rabbinic center now had to move to a city called Yavneh, Y-A-V-N-E-H, on the coastal plain. But here comes the second reason for the devastation of verses 1, 2, and 3, and that's the of accepting of a false shepherd in verses 15 through 17. And now in verse 15, he's told to play another role. Take you again, meaning play a second role, instruments of a foolish shepherd, play the part of a foolish shepherd. Now, the instruments of the foolish shepherd and the good shepherd are the same, but the good shepherd knows how to use them properly, and the foolish shepherd either doesn't use them or doesn't know how to use them. Is to play for the second role because of the purpose of verse 16. For lo, I'll raise up a shepherd in the land, who will not visit those that are cut off, neither will seek those that are scattered, nor heal that which is broken, nor feed that which is sound. He'll eat the flesh of the fat sheep and will tear the hoofs in pieces. And the picture is there'll be the rise of a foolish shepherd who'll be accepted as the Messiah and will not do those things that a good shepherd did. Now, some people apply this to the future Antichrist, but this has actually a more immediate fulfillment in latter verses 1, 2, and 3, but causes the devastation of the land. Now, in Jewish history, the first person to claim to be the Messiah happened to be Jesus of Nazareth. He's the first one to make that claim. And the beginning of a century after that, with the first man, you have a whole line of false messiahs. The first one in the year 132 was a man named Simon Bar Kosiba, spelled K-O-S-I-B-A, K-O-S-I-B-A. Initially, he was not claiming to be the Messiah. He organized the second Jewish revolt against Rome. And the first year and a half, from the year 131 to the middle of 132, just the end of 132, he was winning battle after battle after battle. And the leading rabbi of that day was Rabbi Akiba, spelled A-K-I-B-A, A-K-I-B-A. Akiba was so impressed with Bar Kosiba's conquests that he declared him to be the Messiah. And furthermore, he talked the Sanhedrin to vote him in as the Messiah in the majority. Not all, but the vast majority of the Sanhedrin voted Bar Kosiba to be the Messiah. And Akiba then changed his name from Bar Kosiba to Bar Kochba, C-O-H-B-A, C-O-H-B-A, which means the son of a star, connecting it with the messianic prophecy of Numbers 24, verse 17. Numbers 24, verse 17. And now it was now the battle and the war was under a messianic banner with Bar Kosiba, Bar Kochba to be the Jewish Messiah. The Jewish believers, by the way, did participate initially with the Second Jewish Revolt because the prohibition did not apply, Second Jewish Revolt. And they were part of his Bar Kochba's army. But when he was proclaimed to be the Messiah, and once the battle was changed from the military conquest to a messianic conquest with Bar Kochba to be the Messiah, the Jewish believers could not accept Bar Kochba to be their Messiah and withdrew from the war, withdrew from the army. And that began a serious period of persecution of Jewish believers because of it. What's interesting, only after he was proclaimed to be the Messiah did Bar Kochba begin to lose battle after battle. He finally had to withdraw from Jerusalem. He had to withdraw to the city of Beitar, a few miles to the west of Jerusalem, spelled B-E-T-R, B-E-T-R, southwest of Jerusalem. And there the Romans besieged him and finally broke through. In the course of the final conflict, Bar Kochba was killed. And verse 17 describes the judgment upon the foolish shepherd. What a worthless shepherd that leaves the flock. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. Concerning his arm, he says, his arm shall be clean dried up. It should have been used to protect the flock. It should have corresponded to the first staff beauty, but he failed to protect the flock. As to his right eye shall be darkened. His eye should have been used to watch over the flock, to maintain unity, to avoid the scattering of the flock, corresponding to the second staff. Here he also failed. So with the good shepherd succeeded, this false shepherd failed, which brought on the second major devastation of the land of verses 1, 2, and 3. And now the depletion of the land begins its final phase. This is when the land in 135 was renamed Palestine. And Hadrian renamed the land Palestine after the Philistines. Has no connection with the Arab Palestinians, no ethnic connection. He named after the Philistines. Furthermore, he rebuilt Jerusalem in a Roman Greek pattern, which was into four, the main north-south road, main east-west road, with four corners and four quarters. And to this day, you have the four quarters of Jerusalem based upon the Roman-Greek division of Hadrian in the second century. He also renamed Jerusalem as Aelia Capitolina, and it became a policy of de-Judaizing the country. He also had a large 50-mile radius or so around Jerusalem, but this was off-limits for Jews to attend. And so as a result, Jews could not go to Jerusalem anymore. So Judah ceased to be a major center for Judaism, and the major center moved up to Galilee. And until from the second century up until the fifth century, Galilee was the major center of Judaism, until that was also depopulated of Jewish people. That's also when the Church of Jerusalem became a Gentile church, because Hadrian made no distinctions between Jews who believed and Jews who didn't believe. And once Jerusalem became off limits for all Jews, Jewish believers could no longer go to Jerusalem, had to establish their Messianic congregations elsewhere in the land, outside Jerusalem. And so the Church of Jerusalem now became strictly a Gentile church and was primarily Gentile until 1948. All results of the Second Jewish Revolt. That's the second reason for devastation of the land in verses 1, 2, and 3. Okay, we'll stop here. We'll go ahead and believe we'll take the offering now for our real ministries. And then this afternoon after lunch, we'll